Hi, I'm Steve Clemens, and I have a question. If Americans agree that immigration is one of their biggest problems, why can't they just fix it? Let's get to the bottom line. On his first day in office, President Joe Biden promised to revolutionize immigration coming in from the country's border with Mexico. But even though he reversed some of the anti-immigration policies of former President Donald Trump, this White House still hasn't gotten very far. The crisis at the border persists, and asylum backlogs persist. Things aren't going to be easier in 2023 either. Whenever Biden proposes less deportations and more pathways to citizenship, he gets blocked by Republicans who argue that immigration is just out of control. And whenever he proposes more strict enforcement of immigration laws, he gets attacked by his own progressive base. In the last few days of last year, the Supreme Court ruled that Biden couldn't lift what's called Title 42, a law created by Trump in 2020 that's used to block migrants and prevent the spread of COVID. So can anything be done about the muddy status quo at the southern border of the United States? And what's supposed to happen to the millions of immigrants who are already here without any documents giving them legal residency rights? Today, we're talking with Alan Orr Jr., the founder of Orr Immigration Law Firm and former president of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, and Uriel Garcia, the immigration reporter for the Texas Tribune. Uriel, let me start with you. You're in the, you know, near ground zero of the immigration debacle that's going on. You're in El Paso, and would love to just get your sense of the temperature of things right now, and also whether you've seen any big shifts between the Trump era presiding over our immigration issues at the border and the Biden era.
Yeah, I mean, right now in certain parts of downtown El Paso, there are migrants who are sleeping in the streets still. They're depending on volunteers and NGOs to find them a warm place to stay and get them some food. As far as what the differences are between the Biden administration and Trump administration, I think in part, I think it's the rhetoric. As far as policy, some of the same policies that the Trump administration had, the Biden administration was still applying, including Title 42.
But when you say that people are sleeping in the streets and seem desperate, why are they there?
Well, there's been an increase of number of migrants, particularly people coming from Nicaragua, Venezuela, Cuba. And Border Patrol is processing them as fast as they can, and Border Patrol doesn't have the infrastructure to hold them all, and so they're releasing them to shelters and NGOs, and the NGOs and shelters are at capacity right now. So Border Patrol has been having to release a lot of the people onto the streets, and some of them are sleeping under a parking garage or just out in the open, and so it's a lack of infrastructure.
You know, Alan, one of the things that I've been paying attention to, and we were interested in, doing this conversation with both of you today, was the action taken recently by the Supreme Court to keep the Biden administration from ending what's called Title 42. And for our audience, Title 42 is essentially a public health provision that came out during COVID, worried about the spread of COVID, to block immigrants from coming in the United States. The Biden administration tried to have that expire, to remove that provision. The Supreme Court said, no, leave it in place. Can you explain this and unpack why the Supreme Court of the United States is leaving in place a health provision that many health practitioners, including the Centers for Disease Control, are saying is no longer needed?
As a lawyer, it's not very clear to me why they're keeping it in place. Legally, it should not be there. It is an executive command that is under the control of the CDC, and the CDC said it should not exist anymore. People keep referring to it as Title 42, but in the immigration world, we know it as the Stephen Miller Special. So that tells you right there, it wasn't about COVID. It was about immigration and harm. And what the Supreme Court has basically done, understanding, is a procedural question. And the question before the Supreme Court is, can these states, these 17 states, intervene in this case this late in the argument? It's procedural. So the decision that we will receive in June is not with regards to the merits of if Title 42 can continue to exist, but whether these individuals can actually enter the case. So therefore, Title 42 will be around for a very long time. But in this space, it is important to know, as Miguel is telling you, even with Title 42 in place, people are still being allowed into the country because there's so many exceptions to Title 42.
Let me ask you to explain to our audience why you've labeled this the Stephen Miller bill or the Stephen Miller provision. Tell us about Stephen Miller.
So Stephen Miller's plan in coming in from the Department of Immigration to run in the government was to basically shut down U.S. immigration, to halt it, not just at the border, but even for business immigration. He has a tweet out which basically said that the Trump administration slowed the green card process to allow more U.S. workers to return to the market. So everything that Stephen Miller did in immigration was belt and suspenders. He had to remain in Mexico. He had family separation. He had Title 42. Title 42 has been around since 1942, and the United States has never used it at any other time, even with Ebola. So therefore, you see that it's really not about the CDC, but something else.
But Uriel, what are your thoughts on it? I know you're a reporter reporting on what you see, but I'd just love to get your personal thoughts on why you see this as having been so intractable.
Well, I mean, it's a good campaign talking point, right? I mean, Republicans will always use immigration as an issue of, you know, vote for me because I'm going to stop illegal aliens coming into the country. I'm going to stop criminals and drugs, right? Democrats, on the other hand, will use the same talking point from different perspective and say, well, vote for me and I will continue with some immigration benefits and always promise some sort of immigration reform. At the same time, you know, there a lot of the detention centers that hold immigrants, a lot of them are private, so they also benefit with the high number of undocumented immigrants in the country, because it creates a pipeline to having detention centers filled up with people being accused with being in the country illegally.
Alan, would love to get your thoughts on the same question.
I think it's one of the struggle of our federalism right now is the understanding of how immigration sort of plays and if we are really the United States or if we are blue and red states. And that has played out in the courts continually. Even in the Obama administration, we were suing them. In the Trump administration, we were suing them. So each state attorneys have been suing back and forth. So the problem is it is a playground. And the failure that we have is the failure that we see with everything else in this country is of Congress to act. Congress has not passed any immigration bill in 30 years that will address the needs of the American people and the border concerns. We all talk about it, but we really can't do anything about it. And with the Democrats never really having full control, they don't have enough to carry it across the line. And the other problem we have consistently as Americans is we look to the president to solve a problem that only the legislation can solve. If there's no money there and there's no bill there to give pathways to sort of do what we did with marijuana and what we did with alcohol and all these other, to make a legalization path to sort of regularize it, then it will continue to be this influx. And I think after COVID, it is important to note the border was shut down for almost 3 years, two of the Trump administrations and the first part of the Biden administration because of COVID, and they just reopened it. So that's the large influx along with the political situations that is happening in the Northern Triangle.
Do you think, Alan, that it's going to get worse now? And I want to just preface this with, you know, I deal with a lot of associations in Washington, the National Restaurant Association, the National Small Business Association, the various groups that out there that rely on a labor force that Gina Raimondo, the Secretary of Commerce, has said we're a million jobs, million people short a year right now in terms of the normal influx of people who come. If you look at agriculture in California, most of these places, these associations are dominated in majority, not entirely, but majority by Republicans. And so I'm just interested, will this get worse? And will there be any sensitivity among those Republicans that own these businesses that they're not getting the labor they need?
I think so. With the CHIP Act being passed and the return to infrastructure, I think it's time for us to return to the Reagan platform on immigration to understand that people who have some equity of being here for a long time deserve something, and that immigration is also an opportunity for this country to sort of build forward. We've seen what happened in Japan when they sort of shut down on immigration, and we also see what Canada's doing right now with their large job shortage and the number of people they're trying to get in to sort of beat inflation. So we know we need workers. A little bit of the problem that's happening at the southern border that I should also say is really also picking and choosing which immigrants we want. Ukrainians we want, 100,000 Venezuelans we want. We don't want any of the Haitians. We don't want anybody from Nicaragua. So that is a little bit different than the American platform. So when we start to live our values of what we say we are as Americans and what we have as current asylum law, right, which the Supreme Court is currently blocking, then we'll do a better job with immigration and fixing what we need to happen. So I think it will solve itself because it cannot continue, because we've already seen Cubans now arriving in Florida today, 500 of them, and them saying that's a crisis. 500 people arriving in Florida is not a crisis.
Uriel, how much of what we're seeing at the border and our politics on this and the inaction is, from your perspective, driven by racism?
Well, that's hard to tell, right? You know, no one in the federal government has come out and said, we're picking specific migrants. But I think that when we see stories about when the federal government was able to muster up the resources and there was the political will to help Ukrainians come into the country, you know, that's not suddenly those resources disappear when we're talking about Venezuelans, Nicaraguans, Cubans, and they're coming, and these are people coming from countries in which the U.S. government has described those specific countries as being run by a dictator. So, I mean, I think we can see, based on those stories and based how we treated Ukrainian refugees and the disparate treatment to Latin American immigrants.
Well, you're getting to a point that I think is very important, which is that asylum, our country, the United States, has been a place for those seeking asylum, those being, you know, threatened, their lives threatened, they're harassed, detained, in some cases murdered. The United States has been a haven for people that were subjected to suppression. It's part of the DNA and the legal infrastructure of the country. And so, Uriel, what is happening? So what you've described is lots of people abandoning their countries because of conditions. And I think what has begun to evolve, and I'll just be honest about it, is a sense that nobody believes these are asylum cases. Can you help us unpack the legitimacy or the solvency of those seeking asylum and the scale of that versus being a tactic by people coming up who just want to get into the U.S. and say asylum?
Right. I mean, the migrants have interviewed, and just the reports coming out from Latin America, there's dire conditions, and it varies on the reason why migrants come. I mean, we're talking about climate change affecting farming jobs. We're talking about economic suppression, lack of jobs, political persecution in some of these countries. And as some mothers and some fathers have told me that I've interviewed, they said they don't feel safe sending their children to school or to run an errand around the corner store because they're afraid that they're going to get kidnapped. In some cases, some mothers have told me they've been threatened by drug cartels or organized crime groups. Just the quality of life there is not something that Americans are used to living in. So for a lot of them, they're desperate to come to a safe haven. And regardless of what U.S. immigration policies are, for them, they just want to get to where they feel that they can have some basic level of quality of life.
I want to get to Alan in a second about the law dimensions
of this. Before you get there, I want to make an important point. Yeah. I would like to make a point about that. So it isn't that everybody is entitled to asylum. It's that everybody's entitled to the process.
Right.
So excluding people from having the process to sort them through is the issue that we have with Title 42. So maybe everybody's asylum claim is not a valid claim or doesn't reach the burden that needs to remain in this country. They get to make the claim.
Right.
And that's the problem with Title 42, and that's the problem with our border control. We're saying to some people you can apply and other people you can't.
So, but let me get to this question then, Alan, and pursue this just for a moment. We've done another show recently with Tom Nichols and Farrah Stockman. Farrah's with the New York Times, Tom Nichols with The Atlantic. And in it, we were sort of asking this question of what does the picture look like for processing these claims? And the backlog in the U.S. courts is staggering. Farrah Stockman wrote an article saying, you know, that load is not being processed. The resources are not being moved. And my question is, from a legal responsibility perspective, why isn't the Biden administration putting more resources, money, support staff to process the claims that are already in hand? Because she said just with what we have now, before you have new entrants into it, that system is near collapse.
So I think that problem is very clearly that the president has a pocket, but it's from Congress. So Congress hasn't given the president the money to authorize that he's asked for to meet those backlogs. And I also will say that backlogs are a choice. Much like when we line up at airports, we think that the longer it takes to get somewhere, the safer we are. And that's the problem with immigration across the board. And we're not using modern systems. We're using old systems to handle modern problems. And therefore, we have these big delays. The last administration opened 300,000 closed cases and put them back into the backlog. So what we need to do now is to sort of sort some of these cases out and say, listen, These cases are old. They've been here for a long time. The equities that we talked about under the Reagan administration, we're just going to approve those people. It's not worth it to sort of go through and vet them because they've already been here. If something was going to happen, it's going to happen. And then sort of manage it differently. The concept of saying we're going to look at every case and scrutinize it and do some vetting that doesn't really exist in the real world for people who are seeking to flee for their lives seems remarkably silly to me.
Uriel, one of the other questions, we're just going to get back at it for a minute, was to look at what you were talking about, the conditions in some of these countries with autocrats, people suffering from climate change, but also from miserable other human rights conditions where they may be. One of Kamala Harris's jobs given to her by President Biden was to go down, spend some time in Central America, and look at what could be done to try and support those economies and to mitigate some of these conditions that were driving so much migration. Has there come anything at all tangible that you've seen from Vice President Kamala Harris's efforts?
No, nothing tangible. I mean, the Biden administration has tried to create some programs that would allow some people to apply from their home countries for asylum, but nothing tangible that we can say, you know, any of the Biden administration's efforts have created a certain amount of jobs or has created better conditions for people to live.
Well, thank you. I mean, go ahead.
One thing I do want to point out you know, just because someone does apply for asylum, you know, and let's say that their asylum case does open up, it's not an automatic thing. One point that people need to understand is that I believe the average wait time for an asylum case to be decided is 5 years. So when we talk about the backlog, too, is, you know, people have to wait for 5 years. And in those 5 years, you know, people are still uncertain if they're going to be able to live in the country or have to go back to their home country. So, you know, just to emphasize the point of the lack of resources and the lack of urgency to be able to process these claims sooner and faster.
Well, Alan, kind of given those timelines, and you kind of connect that again to the economic side of what America needs to continue to run its economy, have people come in, does this kind of keep the illegal immigration dimension to our economy kind of thriving? I mean, does America, because it can't process things legally or in a timely way, become weirdly dependent, dysfunctionally dependent on the presence of illegal immigration?
Well, I mean, unauthorized work is sort of the foundation of this country in some ways, and yes, it does. And I will also say the vice president's office during the very first year of her administration did make a private partnership deal that brought billions of dollars to the triangle, which at some point may show a change in the direction. And also with the North America summit that happened in LA this year, there was a large conversation about migration move. And you see Canada sort of stepping on the front of that by saying, we need people, we're gonna facilitate getting that. And you've actually heard many of the people at the southern border now say, we're just trying to get to Canada. Let's sort of make that happen for us. But the conversation for me, for America, shouldn't be about keeping people out. It should be about protecting people because those are our values. And when it comes to asylum, we should also remember that those are also our values. And when we do make these things, just like with alcohol, when you said it was a prohibition, or with drugs, you said it was a prohibition, it creates an underground market. So yes, with Title 42 in place, all the smugglers are making more money. Everyone else who's sort of bringing in these undocumented people to get the food from the table, from the farm to the table for us to eat, are going to thrive. And so it's time for us to meet that need. One of the things that we thought would happen in December was an ag bill, because as you said before, it was a bipartisan situation. There were many Republican states saying we need workers. And in a place where Vermont has a low number of population, our numbers are down. It's time for us to realize that immigration is just one of the other tools we have to survive.
Well, Alan, let me get right at that. We saw Governor Abbott. We saw Governor DeSantis of Florida, Governor Abbott of Texas. Basically, we had a lot of migrants across the border and they flew them to Martha's Vineyard. They flew them to Washington, D.C. to be let off right outside the vice president's house. And I have to tell you, there are a lot of progressives I know, I should say progressives and liberals, who said there is an interesting point behind this, that southern states are feeling the population pressure and the challenges in terms of supporting the costs of those who've just recently come across the border, and that the nation, which may say, hey, that doesn't make sense, we need to be more humane at the border, that they aren't coughing up the support as much. Are there ways to make an egalitarian environment in which other states have more chips in and more support for what some of the causes that you'd like to see, the more humane treatment at the border?
Well, I think the humane treatment is who we are as Americans and what we've resolved after World War II. So that's all of us across the board. I also think that the conversation with regards to Texas saying that this is a burden, when in fact having the border is a benefit, right? How much trade, how much money do they generate for Texas because they are located at the border? How much, what has brought Texas to be at the forefront other than that trade across the border? And you're only seeing a couple of places. I mean, in El Paso, you saw the community step up and accept people. So I would sort of say, you know, that the blessing is also the curse of trying to battle those situations. And probably because the people in those situations have been so much about close the border and hurting people than resolving issues that for the benefit of the people, that that may be the problem. So I don't think that it's necessarily that the states can't absorb those people because they accept airplanes every day. All the other ports are fine and they're able to process them. It's just people at the southern border, which means it's something very focused in a very real hateful manner. And so I think we should stop thinking about people as problems. That's number one, because someone fleeing for their life, no matter what the situation is, whether they meet asylum or not, deserves the dignity of respect for fleeing for their lives. And I think we would do the same thing. And so the resolve here should be, let's live our values and let's understand the way forward is as Americans, as one thing, the election is over, so what's better for the people? And I think that the conversation about what led to the Trump administration being elected, that golden egg of saying he was going to solve the border, which he did not, that we should understand enforcement policies only do not lead to a resolution in immigration. We can't build a wall that will shut us out from the rest of the world.
Uriel, I'd like to give you the last word and ask you as we kind of talk about this and how to unpack this. I read your coverage of this. It's excellent. I recommend that everyone search Uriel Garcia in Texas Tribune and get your updates. But on this broad side of exporting, you know, the border challenges of immigration at the border to other states, which Abbott and DeSantis did, how did that play locally? And what are your thoughts on the sensitivities that the rest of the country should have to this immigration problem?
Look, I think a point that any American should ask themselves is that we have an issue, right? People are fleeing their countries. And as Americans, we should ask ourselves, how do we want to handle this issue? Do we want to handle this issue by just closing off the border, putting up walls, sending the military, or do we want to be humane and help people who are asking for help? And so for NGOs and activists and advocates who've been working with migrants coming across the border, for a lot of them, they're looking for any type of resources to help get the migrants to their final destination. If that comes by Governor Abbott's busing program, they're okay with it as long as it helps the migrant. I mean, there's rhetoric around that program that they don't agree with, but I think ultimately what they want is help. They need resources, and they're asking for the rest of the country to chip in. And like I said, that's the point that I think as Americans, we should ask ourselves. We have an issue. How do we deal with this issue?
Well, immigration lawyer Alan Orr Jr. and Texas Tribune immigration reporter Uriel Garcia, really appreciate the conversation. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So what's the bottom line? The immigration crisis in the Western Hemisphere has been getting worse for decades. And we have to face it. Both U.S. political parties are complicit. Now, even the Supreme Court has stepped in to permit the distortion of what was supposed to be an emergency health-based regulation to keep immigrants out of the country. Congress refuses to budget more money for immigration courts, which means that the courts everywhere are flooded with hundreds of thousands of backlog cases that are going nowhere. Think about it, a legal system in the U.S. that's literally too poor to carry out the law. The Trump administration weaponized the issue and pushed for a wall to cut off the United States from the rest of the hemisphere. The Biden administration has made many promises, but is nowhere near ending the sad, horrific stories of abuse, detentions, rapes, human trafficking, and even deaths at the southern border of the country. And now with the opposition in control of Congress, the window of opportunity for reform just got a lot smaller. And that, sadly, is the bottom line.